Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Don Winslow's City on Fire launched one of the most ambitious crime fiction trilogies, an epic saga that would transport readers from the gritty streets of Providence, Rhode Island, to the glittering screens of Hollywood, to the golden casinos of Las Vegas, as Danny Ryan forges a dynasty. With City on Fire and City of Dreams, Don Winslow captured the hearts of critics, peers, and readers alike through the story of Ryan's transformation from a low-level Rhode Island gangster to a West Coast power player. Now, Winslow delivers City in Ruins, the saga's explosive finale, where Danny Ryan builds an empire of glittering mega hotels and casinos along the legendary Las Vegas Strip. Old rivals resurface and come to take everything that he holds dear. Don is the author of 25 acclaimed award-winning international bestsellers, including 7 New York Times bestsellers, a former investigator, anti-terrorist trainer, and trial consultant. He has announced that City in Ruins will be his final novel. It is a great pleasure to welcome Don Winslow to this week's book show. Thank you so much for being with us. A great honor to have you on the program.
Thanks, Joe. It's my honor. Thanks for having me.
Well, I had to get you now because you're not going to do this anymore. Let me ask you, I'll come back to the retirement, but I will ask about it in the beginning, in the sense of when this trilogy began. Did you know that this would be the end?
Oh, far from it, Joe. I started this trilogy 30 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it took me that long to figure it out. So no, I was, in the earlier part of my career.
What was it that you were trying to figure out?
What I tried to do with this trilogy is to write a fully contemporary modern crime epic while using the stories of the Iliad, the Aeneid, the Odyssey, and certain Greek dramas. While making it, again, fully contemporary, so you could read it without reference or knowledge of the classics at all. What took me a long time to figure out was what would be the contemporary equivalents of those events and those characters. And embarrassingly, that took me a long time to do.
Well, far from embarrassing, but because you're the arbiter, right? You're the one who decides whether it's working or not.
Right. And for a lot of the time, it wasn't working.
Yeah.
I'll bet I threw 300 to 400 pages of this book away.
But it wasn't hampering you in writing other novels.
No, right. I was doing some other stuff. I wrote these 3 sort of big novels about the Mexican drug trade. I wrote a book called The Force about the NYPD and other books. This idea kept nagging at me, it kept coming up. And so I'd be between books and I'd go, okay, pick up Danny again, give it another shot, see how it goes. And then eventually I came up with the ideas that allowed me to finish the trilogy.
Was it always an idea? Did you always have trilogy in your mind?
I did.
Because of those 3 books?
Yeah. Well, really, because, Danny kind of tracks the life of Aeneas when we first meet in the Iliad as kind of a minor player, really. But I always saw Aeneas's life and Danny's life in 3 very distinct phases. One in a mob war, and 2nd as a fugitive, and 3rd then building this empire. So yeah, it was always in my head to do it as a trilogy.
There will be readers, of course, who do not make the connection between that and the Iliad, or yeah. and others. And how much does that concern you or not bother you at all?
Doesn't bother me at all. In fact, it's I'm kind of pleased by it. Most readers have not made the connection. And I wanted this to be just fully modern, fully human, while borrowing from those great themes and those great characters.
As far as great characters, Danny Ryan is a great character. I mean, you must have known that early on.
I've always had this affinity for Danny. I grew up around a lot of Dannys, and I felt that I knew him pretty well. I also liked making him Aeneas because he's, at least in the first book, he's sort of in it, but not of it. He's slightly an outsider in the Irish mob. He's the son-in-law that's kind of tolerated. But then more and more they need him. And he gets more and more drawn into the wars. And so that, to me, made him a really attractive character to write about.
When you knew and you figured out it was going to be a trilogy, the way that it is spaced, the way the story is told, the way that we move across the country is fascinating in its totality, and but obviously seems very planned as well.
Yes and no. Overall arc was known because the overall arc of these stories is known.
Right.
But I really didn't know until, boy, after I'd finished book two, where Danny was going to go in the third book. You know, he needs to build an empire, and I didn't know where that could be in contemporary America. I had ideas that I tried and then rejected. And then finally hit on the idea of, boy, where in America can you build an empire? Las Vegas.
Right.
Yeah.
And that allowed you also to bring back characters, bring back families, bring back grudges, bring back a lot of stuff that would naturally, plausibly wind up in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it worked out well that way, you know. I wanted to wrap up all these characters. You know, I didn't want to leave them out hanging. And I was fascinated in classical literature. What became of these people after the events of the Iliad? You know, who would be a Ulysses, Odysseus kind of character? And what was his wanderings be like? You know, so it was fun to do that.
You do that very much so in the epilogue, and I mean, obviously, you finish up a lot of the storylines in the context of the novel, but the epilogue brings us up to date to almost current day, and that's fascinating too. And what is so cool about it is that it's, at least for me as a reader and a lover of the series and of your work, it's so satisfying.
Oh, thank you. I don't know what to say about that. Thank you. You know, it again, it was the work of 30 years. It felt like a homecoming because I left Rhode Island when I was 17, and then to wrap it all up without giving away the ending, you know, too much. It did feel very satisfying to me as well.
I mean, ask Jerry Seinfeld, finales are hard.
Yeah, I was not a fan of the Seinfeld finale. Although, you know, if I'm cruising around, you know, the channels and Seinfeld's on, I'll often click on, watch a few minutes here and there. I can't watch Marine Biologist too many times. It's so great. The sea was angry that day, my friends.
Dodd Winslow is our guest. The final book in the trilogy is City in Ruins, and it's published by Morrow. While you were writing it, while you're writing the last chapters, while you're writing the epilogue, you're not only finishing up the series, but you're finishing up your writing career. And does that enter into the equation, or did you have to separate that?
I think it did enter into the equation. I really do. You know, I had spent the better part of my career on and off with Danny, and now I have to wrap him up. And I knew I was coming to an end to that phase in my life. And I think that either consciously or subconsciously, it affected the writing, particularly of the epilogue that you referred to.
Given that challenge, it would seem like that would be one of the hardest things you've ever had to write.
It was. It surprised me, actually, how difficult that epilogue was to write. And the feeling that I had after writing it. Of course, you know, you write and rewrite and rewrite and
Sure.
rewrite. But after I finished what I felt was the final draft of that epilogue, it was an immense kind of feeling of, wow, that's over. And what's next? And, you know, how do you say goodbye to all that?
How long after writing the epilogue did you write the acknowledgments, which is basically a thank you for your entire career?
I'm not being coy. I'm really trying to remember. I want to say 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I wrote the acknowledgments during the sort of copy editing phase of the book. You're doing the final version of the book. I wanted to give it that time because I really wanted to think about the acknowledgments.
So many people
So
that
many people,
you
man.
felt were important to your maturation as a
Yeah,
successful author.
absolutely. You know, I mean, we talk about, and it's sort of a cliche, we talk about writing being a solitary activity, and largely it is. You spend most of your time alone. But it's not one person that produces a book or certainly creates a career. You know, it's a lot of people, a lot of whom I'll maybe never meet. You know, every time I turn the lights on, I'm indebted to 1,000 people I'll probably never meet. Turning the computer on, same thing. Books delivered to bookstores travel over roads that people repair, you know, and work on, and I'll never meet them either. And but the acknowledgments, you know, were also to a lot of individuals who helped me and formed me along the way.
So, because I blame rock and roll, but because of old rock stars who say this is my last final tour, and then it's not,
Right.
and then they continue and keep on going and going and
Yeah.
going, and you can see them at Turning Stone Casino next week. You make a firm
Oh.
decision that this is going to be it is a major decision.
It's a major decision, sure. And listen, a couple of factors, you know, have, this is redundant, factored into that. One is finishing this trilogy felt like the work of a lifetime, and it felt like a homecoming. The second is things that are happening in the country that I feel need a more immediate response than you can produce in a novel. And that's where I think my energies need to go.
That is like clearing your plate and saying, okay, this is what we have to work on. This is
Yeah.
what I want to accomplish. What have you carved out or figured out that you can acknowledge and help in that situation?
Well, listen, it's not new. We've been doing this for, you know, years now, since about 2015,
Right,
right?
yes.
I'll let you figure out the significance of that. So it's not a new thing. I've been doing these, well, they used to be called tweets. I don't know what they're called now, commenting on politics and on the social situation. My friend and partner Shane Salerno and I have, you know, cooperated on videos that have received over 300 million views, 15 million just for the last three. So what we're trying to do, and I think have done, is reach out to people, you know, reach out to what I would consider to be our base to help motivate them, reach out to swing voters. During the 2020 campaign, we very much targeted, for instance, Pennsylvania and Michigan, and then Georgia in the Senate runoff election to speak to those people, speaking to people who might support Donald Trump and giving them reasons not to. That's what we've been doing, and that's what we're going to continue to do and ramp it up as we get closer to the election.
Your concern seems deep enough that, as I mentioned a moment ago, that's different than clearing your plate for the 2024 election. That is, we're in this for the long haul to save democracy.
Yeah, but listen, I'm focused on that battle right now because that is the critical battle, right? Then we'll look at the rest of the war. But you know, you're absolutely right. Look, I mean, as a writer, libraries are under attack, teachers are under attack, writers are under attack. It is more than just Donald Trump, but it is the whole culture that he has helped to create, this right-wing, and I consider to be neo-fascist backlash against all kinds of people. And so, yeah, we fight that on a daily basis. We'll continue to fight that. But I'm very, very focused on the election because that is the critical battle.
And yet, your fiction is far from overtly political.
True.
And that, I assume, also is a conscious decision.
Yeah, for the most part. Listen, when you write about the subjects that I write about, even fictionally, yeah, particularly the drug books, but also policing,
Yeah.
it moves, well, I should just speak for myself. It moved me toward the political more than I ever thought I would be. You know, I did a book called The Cartel about the Mexican drug situation, and after it came out, I realized that I felt that I should do something outside the realm of narrative fiction. Otherwise, I'm just another guy making money off dope. So I think in researching those books about the war on drugs, about immigration, about the opioid crisis, about policing, it led me into being more politically active and more politically vocal. But yeah, in my fiction, I don't write overtly political books. What I'm trying to do is tell good stories with good characters.
Back to the videos, 300 million views. So for the listener to this program, as you well know, on the best of days, the best of books, you sell 1 million, and that's a
That's a
really,
lot.
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
You're
Right.
it's usually around a successful book is 300,000.
Right.
That's mind-boggling when you
Isn't it?
think of the difference.
Isn't it? Yeah. And also the temporal difference, in the sense that if I were to write a book about these issues, it would take me a couple of years at least to write the book. And then it's another year and a half in the publication process. By that time, the battles you would hope to fight would have been won or lost. Whereas, on social media, it's the press of a button and you're right there in real time.
When you're putting the videos together, the writer in you is still being utilized.
Yeah, it's a different kind of writing, though. Listen, I think as I've gone on as a writer, and my first book was published, what, in 91, I think I've become more efficient with words. I hope at least that I've used fewer words to say more. With the videos, even more so, right? Because they're usually run about a minute and a half to 2 minutes tops, and you need to say a lot with a few words. But of course, you also have the images telling a story.
Don Winslow is our guest. The new novel is City in Ruins. It is published by Morrow. One of the things that struck me while you were talking about your career, sort of the culmination after this trilogy, and we were talking about how you came to it and it took you 30 years. But what's fascinating about it is from the time City of Dreams came out to this book is a relatively short period of time,
Very much so.
which seems to me, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way at all, but what because any sort of writing I know is very tough, but it seemed like it flowed out of you much in a way that was quite natural.
I think it flowed out of me in a way that was quite natural, but not as fast as you think. Look, again, I was working on this book for decades. It was never ready. It was never ready. It was never time. I think I wrote the third book relatively quickly. I think it took me a couple of years once I hit upon the critical ideas that underlie the book. But otherwise, no, it was a very slow process.
Yeah. But it's one a year, right? And with 22, 23, and 24.
Publishing one a year,
Correct.
right? I mean, look, I wrote the first sentence of that first book, well, it's 30 years ago now. That never changed by a syllable up until the time it was published. So what you had were parts of manuscripts laying around that then I was finally ready to send into the publisher and that they wanted to put them out once a year, but they certainly weren't written inside of the year.
Does one thing inform the other in the sense of what was happening in the country? What was happening that was also taking up your time with the videos and your great concern about the future of this nation? Does that help inform and in some way solidify what you want to tell in that trilogy?
I don't think so. The trilogy begins in 1987, ends in the late 90s. So there was really nothing particularly relevant with the current political situation in terms of these books. Now, I'm a historian by inclination and education. And so I like reading history and I also like writing history. So I think in most of my books, you're always going to find a certain element of social history about the country.
But I'm reading City of Ruins, Don, and I'm still asking myself, so how do you go bankrupt if you're running a casino?
Well, it takes a certain kind of mind, doesn't
I mean,
it?
the deck is literally stacked in your
The
favor.
deck is literally stacked. My grandmother in New Orleans was a professional gambler and taught me to gamble, taught me to shoot dice and played blackjack and poker and all. She used to make me do it with her as a child. She'd take my toys, if I lost. And I remember sitting with her in front of the TV looking at these Las Vegas casinos, which at the time were considered palaces and now would not be. And she looked at me and she said, pointed at one of these casinos and said, "Darling, they don't build that because you win." So, yeah, it takes a certain kind of ineptitude, I think, to have a casino go bankrupt.
The point where you became a novelist and started to write in the first place, as you said, in the early 90s, and your background is quite varied, as I mentioned in the introduction. What led you to writing the first novel?
Always wanted to write a novel. Since I was a little kid, that was my dream. Dreams get sideways. You get busy just trying to make a living, pay the rent, feed yourself. So, I did a lot of different things. But around the time I started to write my first book, which was called A Cool Breeze on the Underground, I began to realize, I think, that either I was lying to myself or I was cheating myself. Either I was lying to myself and saying, "You want to be a writer," or I was cheating myself by really wanting to be a writer and then not doing it. I was in Africa leading a photographic safari, sitting around the campfire before dawn, shivering with a malaria relapse, and thinking, "You know what? Either you're going to do this thing or you're not going to do it." And so then I decided, okay, you are going to do this thing. And I started on this discipline of writing 5 pages a day.
As far as the background as a terrorist trainer and as an investigator and even a trial consultant, did that help inform the type of fiction that you write? I mean, what generically we would call crime fiction?
Maybe. I'm of several minds about that, I had always loved crime fiction, and when I was working in New York as a private investigator is when I started reading it. I started reading Lawrence Block's wonderful Matthew Scudder series because I was working in Hell's Kitchen. I started reading the irreplaceable Elmore Leonard and those people, and I started to get this feeling, yeah, I love this literature. Maybe I could write that. It was also speaking to me, particularly Scudder, about my own life. And so it meant something. In terms of the work influencing it, I think it was more that the work let me enter into the world of criminals and lawyers and cops and courtrooms and, things that I got very used to being around, began to understand those worlds and get an idea of the jargon and the language and the attitude and all of that. But I think most importantly, it taught me how to be a good researcher. Later in life, I picked up the private investigator thing in California on a much higher level of getting ready for trials and trying to compare testimony and witnesses with documents, which often conflicted. And so I learned how to interview people and really how to search out the truth of something and how to look at documents and read documents in sort of organize an intelligent way, which really later on informed my research for writing.
Will there be part of you that misses writing the 5 pages a day?
Sure. Already do.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, look, so I was in the harness for a long time, Joe,
Yeah.
I was, I think, six or seven published books into my career before I could become a full-time writer. But when I did, I was very disciplined about it and had a routine, getting up at 5 and starting work at 5:30 and working until 5 or 5:30. Now I get up and it's a bit different, that I'm more focused on current events and news and not producing 5 pages. It sometimes feels weird to me to get up and think, "Well, I'm not doing that chapter today," or "I'm not going into that sequence of the book," or whatever it happens to be. So, sure.
None of my business, but I'm just curious. Do you work for you or do you work for others?
It depends on what period you mean, and let me explain that. I think this answers your question, but ask it again if it doesn't. In the early drafts of a book, I'm writing for me. It's just me and the book, and I'm not thinking about anybody else. As the drafts go by, particularly when we're getting into the sort of double digits of drafts, I'm thinking more and more and more about the reader. to the point where in the final draft, that's all I'm thinking about. How does it fall on the reader's ear? Does it make narrative sense? Is the writing as beautiful as it could be? Is it reader friendly? So, in the beginning, completely solo exercise, selfish, self-absorbed kind of thing. At the end, though, totally thinking about the reader.
So that's a great answer, and I my question actually, and I'm glad you answered it that way, but it does give me an opportunity to ask, when you're making the videos, are you doing it for you and for your, in the sense of you're working for you, or are you working for another organization that is wants you to work on these videos to put out?
No, I'm working for me. We're not hooked up to any other organization. We don't take donations. We neither seek them nor accept them. I pay for it. I don't take guidance or,
That's the best part, right?
from anyone else. So no.
What is your sense of the next several months?
Well, I think it's going to be very tense. I think tragically, there is a path to victory for a man who tried to overthrow the government of the United States, and now I believe wants to be a dictator. I think, unfortunately, that is a possibility. I think it's going to be a very tense election, and it's incumbent on us who still believe in democracy in this country to fight that, to get organized, to vote, to encourage other people to vote, to, if we have the resources, to donate some resources and fight this fight.
Don Winslow's new novel is City in Ruins. It is published by Morrow. Don Winslow, what a great pleasure to speak to you. I thank you so much for the beautiful literary career you have and the great
Oh,
work
thank
you're
you, man.
doing now. It's just a great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Again, Don Winslow's new novel is City in Ruins. It is published by Morrow. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.